Yeah, wasn't it supposed to come down? I think it's supposed to be down Friday for like half the day or something.
Yeah, it's never right back up.
You got your shirt boats out? Buddy out? I wasn't sure if it was any boys.
Yeah, Randy turned out it.
What's going on with the Warrior Two?
Friday gets worse.
Trying to get him to go Friday.
I don't know.
It'll be tough weather after Friday, won't it?
Richard, you can start whenever you would like.
Be Buddy's weather.
We can start.
Okay, we will call the meeting to order. This is the Port of Brooklyn Harbor Regular Commission meeting, Wednesday, August 17th, 2020. And we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Danielle, roll call please.
Larry.
Here.
Ken.
Here.
Sharon.
Here.
Joe.
Here.
Richard.
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda? We're just talking about the new agenda. Okay. Any potential conflicts with that?
No.
Okay. So I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as written.
Second.
Okay, before we get any farther, let me just tell the commissioner this is not an action, but we are to select our art award. Okay. And I would like after the meeting today or whenever, you to go look and give me your three choices and then bring them back Friday because we're going to have a special meeting Friday. And I will tell you that numbers 349 and 350 are off the table. They've already been picked. Okay. All right, thank you. Moves us to approval of meeting minutes.
I make a motion to approve.
Roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to roll every time. Danielle, this is approval of the agenda. I got to hit myself.
Larry.
Here.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Or no. Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll try approval of the meeting minutes.
I make a motion to approve the regular commission meeting Wednesday, July 20th, 2022.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to public comments. I have none in front of me. Do you have any?
I did not receive it.
Okay. So that brings us to the management report, starting with the July 2022 Safety, Security, and Environmental Report.
Port staff was reviewed on OSHA's new rules for wildfire smoke and the dangers of the wildfire smoke and how employees can protect themselves. The port had 5 incidences for the month of July, bringing the year total to 57. 4 ACEs and the port came across 250 security issues, bringing the year total to 971. Monthly inspections were completed for our stormwater pollution control plan. Our discharge monitoring report was submitted for the second quarter, which is April through June.
Sorry.
And there were 2 oil sheens found in Basin 2. And the National Response Center and Oregon Emergency Response System were notified of both incidences. We did have the Pirate Festival last weekend. The Art on the Boardwalk will be ending on September 11th. And South Coast Water Trails is having a little event on September 17th at the boat launch ramp.
Okay, thanks. Any questions? You have a question about the oil sheets. So what happens when you find one of those? You have to clean it up or just report it and try and find the source?
You report it, you try and find the source, and if it's an ongoing spill, then we'll use our booms, our containment booms. But most of the time, by the time we get to it, it's so big that you can't contain it. It's, as long as you know it stopped, it will dissipate.
Would it just generally build water, you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most every time, that's what it is. And our cameras are doing a fantastic job of tracing those back. If we know what it is and it's soon enough, we just push rewind and you just, you bounce around to enough cameras, you just see it go right back to where it came from, or at least get you really close.
And if you identify a source, then what do you do?
They have 30 days, we call them, we'll take a look at what they have. If there's any corrections or anything that needs to be made, typically I'll give them 30 days to make the repairs, or if it happens again, then we take the next steps and see if we're going to terminate them or...
They also have to talk to DEQ.
Yeah, when we turn them in, then we also, if we know who it is, they also have to talk to the Coast Guard and DEQ, and the Coast Guard usually will give somebody more warnings and leniency than what we kind of would expect, but typically they'll give them 2, 3 warnings, 4 warnings before you'll see any type of real action against them. And it is spill and size dependent and, you know, what exactly the situation is, but we try and work with our customers to make sure, you know, give them the options, make sure they know where they can get rid of it, help them with pumps, barrels, whatever it takes to get it cleaned up, and then usually the 30 days comes in because engine's leaking oil, hydraulic hose is leaking, usually it's something kind of dumb that ends up in the bottom of the boat, and when it rains, typically, you'll see that come out.
Well, being a boat owner, I have to say I haven't seen a boat that doesn't leak sometime sooner or later, particularly when the engine's worn in.
Try and guide them to use the oil-absorbing rags, you know, anything you can to just minimize it. And if it's really bad, you have a big project ahead of you, but to get it back to clean. But those are the things we keep working through with guys.
Okay, thanks. Harbor Master report.
Okay. In the RV park, there were many small repairs with spigots, cable ends, 30-amp plugs. There was a lot of use. The occupancy was at 72%. The bathroom door on the women's shower was slammed so hard that it bent the latch, and we had to cut the door open, cut a hole in the door to get it to open. That door has been replaced, and we added new dog pot stations and signs stating that dogs should be on a leash at all times. There's, I think, 4 of them that went up throughout the walkway in the RV park. In the marina, the staff will continue to do brush removal around the barge basin. Quarterly dock inspections were done. Work orders were made for small repairs. We also started doing seaworthy inspections on vessels that may be in question or we haven't seen move. Any problems or violations that are found, we've given them 30 to 60 days, depending on what the issue is for them not being able to get it back to seaworthy and then reschedule a new seaworthy inspection. Boat launches, there were 982 boat launches. It's one of our highest ones yet. Telehandler jobs, we did one. We did 8 haul-outs in the boatyard. On the commercial receiving docks, we completed the quarterly inspections. There was also annual inspections done of all the dock hoists and the travel lift. All hoists in operation passed. All the results will be sent to OSHA and our office for our records. Commercial retail buildings, no change to report at the boatyard building or Hallmark dock. The main retail building has nothing to report, but it is something that we might want to start thinking about in the very near future is the roofs on these buildings. We've talked about them for many years, and we've managed to patch them, keep them going, but every year we deal with leaking roofs. I think the roofs are 22 years old-ish, something like that, so they are on their way. And if we're going to do it, it's probably going to be best to do one building one year and then do the next building just to save on costs, because it's going to be extremely expensive to do the roofs. Staff completed 100 work orders in the month of July. Landscaping was a large part of it. Staff weeded the retail area and rock beds along Lower Harbor Road, brush removal from the banks and site cleanup at checkout time at the RV park. July had a lot of people out fishing. That resulted in 11 dump runs, about 22 yards of fish for the month of July. And we have surely surpassed that by double for this month.
Is any of that going to Alexander's? Did
we
used to take it there?
We used to be taking it there, but after weighing cost, time that our employees are gone making that trip, it's actually, in the end of everything, cheaper for us to take it to the dump, and it gets us our employee back about 45 minutes sooner than taking it to Alexander's Dairy. So gas prices started having a big thing to deal with it, too. Is why the cost went up pretty quick. That and the time, you know, when they're gone for an hour and a half making that trip versus to the dump and back, it's a lot sooner we get them back.
So when you're talking about roofs, would that be the time for us to talk about the architecture on the roofs and maybe simplifying the roof line?
Yep. It'll be a good time to talk about the whole thing. You know, getting a price to do the whole roof, getting a price to have all these dormers taken off and make them just straight gable to gable. It might be something we want to make sure we put in a meeting packet and talk about, you know, a couple times to get public opinion on the aesthetics of it. But they're both options. You know, either way, when we first do the roof, if we have to hire somebody to come do it, it's going to be expensive for them to tear all that stuff off. And the far future of new roofs, it'll make it a lot easier. But we can talk about it then when we're ready to do the roofs. I figured we could talk about it probably in the middle of winter when they start leaking and it becomes a little more of an issue, and then try and get some quotes in and shoot for next summer to build it, to re-roof if that's what we decide to do.
Well, we would probably be well advised to start with the contract and schedule as early as possible so that we don't get caught up with can't get to you until October kind of with the contractor, so.
Yeah, they're not going to get done this year, but next right. summer we can definitely set ourselves up to be ahead of that game.
Okay. Financial, July 2023 financial and manager report.
I'm not really going to go over all this unless you guys have any questions. If there's any questions, especially with the financial report, if I can't answer it, we can always take notes and get back to Kim and Kim can get us the answers too if there's questions.
Well, I'm looking at this compared to the past couple of months, but it's fairly consistent except for the fuel dock. We made money on the fuel dock this time because we weren't buying gas. We were selling for a change.
Yep.
But I didn't see anything in here that, you know, made my knees buckle when I looked at it. It looked pretty normal.
And fuel prices, other than, well, gas, unfortunately, is not going down, but diesel is starting to drop at a pretty high rate of speed.
Yeah, I see Fred Meyer right now at $5.99. It's finally broke the mass barrier.
Yeah, we got a little bit more gas to go through. Unfortunately, I think we buy most of Tyree's gas, so whatever they have in stock, I think we're stuck paying for a lot of it. I don't think there's very many people dipping into their supply.
Probably not.
Richard, I have a question going back to the Harbor Masters report.
Okay, go ahead.
The sign out in front of Zola's at the launch ramp, is that on the property he leased from us, or is that
I believe that's in, I think he's just outside the boundary of what we just made for his new lease.
He's outside the boundary.
I would say probably about a sign's width. It's off.
Is the sign, so if he moved it in 6 inches or a foot?
I think if he moved it about 4 feet, I think he'd be inside his leased area.
Well, I find the sign offensive personally to the other people, but maybe that's just me. But he never talked to you Tori put it in.
No. I can have a conversation with him about moving inside his leased area if that's what everybody, I mean, it's his leased area. I can have a conversation with him.
It blocks a pretty good view of the launch ramp.
Well, and there's the drop-off, and the people stand behind there, you know, you want them to fall over there. But if you just move in a little bit, but I kind of like the sign.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to him and just make sure, and I'll double-check with his lease footprint, and we'll just make sure it's inside his lease footprint.
It's on safety thing.
If nobody else is concerned about it, don't worry.
I didn't like the sign, but my concern goes much deeper than that. I'm thinking that in the very near future, we need to have a sit-down with our attorney and talk about this. Because I'm just not willing to continue to have one more and one more and one more come along. But that's down the road.
Thank you.
Okay, back to the manager report.
Did you guys read over, did Gary put the manager's report in?
No.
So when I read it, there was a question at the last meeting about the stolen boat, about the lighting, the adequacy of the lighting. And what this says is in talking with the sheriff's department, it was determined that the lighting is adequate to be able to identify people. Is that right?
It was, lighting was not an issue in identifying where he went down there, what he was doing. You could clearly see it on the video camera, him going down the docks, back in, stopping at his boat, getting in his boat, starting it, and leaving it. We do have lights out there. After the event that we just had, it's one of the things I was going to bring up is re-looking at the entire power situation on the boardwalk and updating some plugs and boxes that are in there, and then while we're doing that, getting the lights to work back on along the boardwalk that shine down on the dock. Lighting would help, but it wasn't an issue with the boat.
Did the sheriff have any recommendations that you know of about security or cameras?
Nope. The sheriff's department's actually been able to make quite a few cases with our security cameras and being able to identify who and what's going on. So I think they're adequate right now. I do think that the lights can be repaired on the boardwalk to get them up and running, but they're kind of a part of a bigger electrical issue out on the boardwalk as it stands.
Well, certainly looking at this last weekend, distribution of power is an issue. It kind of looked like a worm farm out here with the extension cords running everywhere. I mean, there were a lot of them.
The only phone calls I got to come down here is because breakers were popping. So overloading, I'm sure, with some of it, weak breakers and GFIs, I'm sure, some other issues.
Well, just under the auspices of the manager report, I would think that later in the year, we should probably have a postmortem on the fire festival. And sit down and talk about it. And I think we should sit down and talk about it with the sheriff's department as it relates to the parking on the street. I mean, the bike lane was entirely full of cars and those sorts of things. I'm not suggesting we get rid of anything, but I think we need to talk about it and see if there are issues we need to be prepared for next year or things that we can anticipate we may ask the vendor to do next year.
They've been parked in the wrong.
Yeah.
But maybe they can work out something next year so that maybe the people could utilize another park area and have shuttles like they do, like the kite festival.
Well, that's kind of all what we need to talk about because there are things that we need to address with them.
Yeah. So Chrissy Cooper did contact me. They were hoping to be here to do a couple of comments, but they had some issues and canceled all of it. They plan on coming to the next meeting to discuss the event and their success. So just so you guys are prepared for that.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt it was successful. My concern is it was maybe a little too successful. from the perspective of what it did to the rest of the port and the road and those kind of things. I mean, if nobody cares they park in the bike lane, then from an enforcement standpoint, then I guess I don't either, but I'm pretty surprised that that's not some kind of an issue. But anyway, okay, thanks. We'll deal with that. Okay, any further on the management reports? You want to make a motion to approve the management
report? I'll make a motion to approve the management reports for July 2022 as discussed.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion in a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that moves us to action items. Action item A, the U.S. Coast Guard dock lease renewal agreement approval.
Okay, I think, did all of them get one of these?
Yes. So Gary was just removed as a signer.
Gary was removed.
So this is the one that we got here that supersedes the one that's in our package, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. But the bottom line here is that this is just a renewal of 150 feet of dock, portable dock that the Coast Guard uses, and this is their annual renewal, and it's a 4.5% CPI increase, just like everybody else.
Yep.
Okay. And because it's the U.S. Coast, is this any thicker than a normal dock lease? It looks to me like it might be.
I'm sure they had a little language to put in it themselves.
Well, this is, I imagine this is a pretty pro forma U.S. Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, they like to have their wording in there.
Yeah.
Does our legal review this?
I believe our legal has reviewed all this. James isn't here today, but I can't tell you for sure if the legal's reviewed it or not.
All right. Other questions? Comments?
Does it change from last year's?
No, it doesn't change. It's just without Gary, and it has the 4.5% increase.
So it's the same as it was last year.
Yeah, it's a lot of wordage here for 152 feet of dock, but.
Okay. Action.
Motion to approve U.S. Coast Guard dock lease number HSCG89-22-1-0085.
Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the Southern Oregon Credit Service request for small claims approval. This is pretty straightforward. This is a delinquent account, amount of $3,601 for John Hyatt. And the request here is that we approve Southern Oregon Credit Services to proceed with litigation on the John Hyatt remaining debt.
I'll make a motion to approve Southern Oregon Credit Services collect Northwest to proceed with litigation on John Hart for the remaining debt owed.
I second that.
Okay. Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item C, boatyard warehouse structural analysis and report approval expense. And approval for expense.
Okay.
So,
hold on, catch up.
In our package, we have a synopsis of information received from 9 structural engineers and architectural firms outlining what their proposals would be or their inability to do it. And to do it, by that I mean a structural analysis of the building.
after having reviewed it, and like I said, there's like 9 people contacted, and those that responded, the consensus was it's not worth doing repairs to, if I read it correctly.
I read some that said that. I read some that said they didn't have time to come do it. So, in the meantime, since the last meeting, I've gone down and looked at the place. You know, I'm not a structural expert, but I've owned a house for over 50 years, various houses for over 50 years. And I know what it's cost me to fix them and what has to be fixed and what hasn't. And when I walk in that building, I just look at it and go, I don't know that we should spend more money to analyze something that I don't think is salvageable. But that's just my opinion.
I don't feel it's going to be going anywhere either.
I went and looked and took pictures, and again, just having, I think there was 3 people that actually responded out of the 9 and said, just from looking at pictures, they're not even comfortable saying it could be repairable or that it's worth repairing.
I just would hate to see the port spending $30,000 on something they're going to tell us we should have got in the first place.
Well, I appreciate the concern about fiscal issues, because that is kind of the driving factor from my perspective here. But having looked at that, and thought about the fact that, you know, we were pretty interested in having storage space rentals and rentals for retail space. And that's kind of what we're really looking at doing here, is building a retail rental and storage rental facility on the port. So, I mean, I'll open it to anybody that wants to make a motion.
Well, I'd still like to make a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's part of our due diligence to look at what it would cost. Any building can be repaired. You can leave one, you know, 2x4 up, and it's a remodel. There's an outfit, an engineering company in Grants Pass. This one for $30,000 is out of the question in my mind also. We do not need an electrical system analysis. You're going to pay for that in a new building or this building if it were to be remodeled. All we need is a structural engineer that says, this is what you need to do to bring this building up to code structurally. If, and the guesstimates on that from what I originally understood were $5,000 to $10,000. All the sheet metal on that building is cosmetic. It serves as a function of weatherproofing, but it's still cosmetic. You can make that building look like anything you want to make it look like. And the roofing does not need to be, you know, this cheapest possible roofing that's out there. You've got all sorts of architectural panels, full-length panels. I mean, that building can be made to be quite attractive if it passes structural. Also, the entrance where Joe's shop is could be located in the back of the building, so you have a very nice looking building on the face of it. There's plenty of room for shops in there. So I would still think, you know, we're looking first, we were told $1.2 million was going to build 5 buildings, which is obviously not correct. 2 to 3 million is now the price on the new building down there at that location. So in the big scheme of things, another 5,000 or 10,000 that could possibly save a tremendous amount of money. Plus, we continue to just look at, we have a new roof now to look at for one of these buildings or both these buildings. We have a match fund of pushing $1 million on a waste treatment plant that we have to come up with a plan on that. We have Jack's Engineering that is not going to be reimbursed. We have block walls down in the RV park. I mean, it just here, $30,000 here, $100,000 there, $1 million here. I think it's we need to look at it. Just like the green building, we looked at what it was going to cost, we took it down because that was most effective. That's my comment.
Okay. Well, I looked at, I mean, I've sat and looked at this particular building a lot and thought about it a lot since our last meeting. And like I said, I went and looked at it. I don't want to go in depth. I don't want to spend money that we don't need to spend. But when I look at this, we're at a decision point about what to do. It looks to me like this is a great opportunity for us to say, okay, let's step forward. We know we got an issue with the one we have. And I don't know how much, you know, really you can make a purse out of a sow's ear on that thing. I just don't know if you can do it. But we do have a chance to replace it with something that I'm relatively certain is going to pay for itself and then some. It meets one of the things that we had talked about with the green building site, which is providing some storage space, large storage units. You know, whether that's going to, those are a little big for an RV probably, but that's one thing that we know is lacking in this community. We also have an opportunity to put in two big shop buildings. Who would rent those? I mean, Kenny has expressed interest in doing that, but, you know, I'm not going to take that to the bank. But I just see this as a juncture at which the port has an opportunity to step forward, build a facility that will pay for itself, and modernize something that we know needs to be fixed. So, the recommended motion here is to move forward and pick one of these people to do an analysis for us, or to not do that. And if we decide not to do that, then I think the next course of action at the next meeting is to come back and approve the port to go ahead and begin the process of finding a design, correct?
Either, yeah, starting over, basically we'll just start over with a new design and decide if we want steel, wood, how, you know, maybe a wood building pole barn might not last as long, it might last just as long, and it might be a lot cheaper.
Right. But, and right now, do you feel like we need something more than what we have down there now? I mean, when we go to replace, do we want to just replace what square footage we have now?
Well, again, I think that if we get a design, if we can select some sort of a design or two or three designs, then we finally have a dollar figure. We know how many square feet are going to be in it. We know what it's going to be made of. We know how it's going to be configured. That then allows somebody to come in and tell us, well, if you ask me to build that building, this is what it's going to cost you. Right now, we've said, well, conceptually, if you were going to build X, Y, and Z, what would it be? And they're going, well, I don't know. I can give you a wag, but until you give me details about what kind of floor you want in it, what kind of electrical systems do you want, you know, do you need sprinkler, insulation, how big are the doors, all of that kind of stuff. I think they're just going to keep going, what, you know.
Right.
Well, I'll give you a guess, but I can't give you.
We have tenants down there that are leasing from us now, and if we can provide them with a space like what they have or that it would, or similar, it would pay for it. So, yeah.
But, yeah, so at this point, though, the decision is whether or not to go ahead and have a structural analysis done. And then the next decision point will be to come back, talk about all the things we just mentioned. What do you want this to look like? What kind of spaces do you want? What kind of material do you want it to be made of? And go from there.
Right.
And until anything is done, the people are going to stay in that building and continue to pay rent. So we're not losing anything until
anything's done. We go ahead and do our monthly inspection. We make sure that it's not going to fall down to the best of our knowledge. Okay. They continue to pay their rent. We move on as we do right now.
Right. And they could stay in there until, actually, if we do a new building, current tenants would stay in the current building until that new one is done paying
as we go. If we design it that way.
I mean, that's not
true. They don't want to lose revenue either.
Right. And then they would just move over to the new building, start paying there, and vacate the blue building.
We wouldn't have an option to move over to the new building at whatever price we charge per square foot for that. Because, you know, some of, depending on what we choose, some of the sites are going to be potentially bigger than what they're currently leasing, so it'd be more money. But again, that's speculation because we don't have a design. Okay, so I will make a motion. And my motion is that we not have a structural analysis done on this building, given the expense, but we not have a structural analysis done on the building, and that we ask staff to bring us back a package that includes beginning of this, selecting and beginning a design at a future meeting. Okay. Well, let me see if I phrased that right. We're not going to, we do not agree to have a structural analysis done, and that we would like to begin the process of selecting a design and materials at a future meeting. Not yet. No, I think we're trying to take this incrementally. So we're not going to do the structural analysis. We're going to come back and begin the design. Once we have a design preliminarily done, then we can start getting cost estimates and look at financing and walk it down the line.
Right. Hopefully, Richard, we can get a design that will look affordable to us, because a lot of times we get all these designs and they're way above what we can even reach. So I just hope that works like that.
Well, a lot of that.
Because it's just they're spending too much time on it.
A lot of that, when we get down the road, will depend on our rate of return, whether we can pay for it or not, what it's going to cost us in terms of loan fees, all the stuff that you would normally contemplate. But for the moment, the motion is that we not proceed with a structural design.
Right.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, then.
You guys are just sitting there.
No, I was just thinking.
Yes,
me too.
Okay. Anything further? Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
No.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the new RV park fence divider. Travis, do you want to handle that?
So our project for the RV park is obviously coming up. We have 28 sites that will need new fence dividers. We need to kind of nail down exactly what we want our dividers to look like. I know we talked about this before, but we're at the point where I need to start ordering materials and getting, figure out how much this is going to cost for all of this. So the current, as wrote here, the current budget that we have for the fence dividers is $25,000. With concrete and blocks, I would like to figure out what we're going to do and then relook at what that total number is going to be and make sure we're still within that budget. So we need to basically decide if we want concrete blocks. This is what we have. We have the concrete blocks, one on each end, with the car decking in the middle, slid down. We can do that, wood or chain link fence. That's what our options are looking like.
I like the way this design is, because there's slide outs. They're getting more and more slide outs, and they can slip right over to on the top there. So
yeah,
it actually gives our units more space.
Talking about big blocks, Travis.
Just like our normal concrete blocks, setting them at each end. The pad will be 24 feet long, so they'll come in 6 feet and then use an aluminum channel, three-sided channel, screw it to the concrete blocks, and then slide the car decking, the tongue and groove down. It'll be like 5/4 high. On the bottom, we'll put a piece of pressure treat down there so it don't rot the bottom of it out. And if somebody hits it, moves it, it should still move probably without breaking. I don't really expect the wood to break. I think it'll just move and we'll be able to readjust it. If we set any posts or anything in the ground, the RVs, they do hit them, and then we have to rebuild the whole fence. This labor and maintenance-wise will be easy to maintain.
We have a lot of space,
There's not a lot of space. These blocks will, the other thing the concrete blocks will do is serve a purpose with protecting our utility, our new pedestals, and as much of the sewer lines and water lines as possible, just giving us a barrier that they're not going to hit it. Everyone can hope.
Travis, have you checked what the price difference between the blocks would be if you went chain link fence with the little slats in between?
I think we had it at one point. Like I said, this meeting packet was done before. I can, if you want, we still have more time. I can relook at what the chain link fence was going to, can cost, what that's going to cost with slats. It shouldn't take me that long to be able to do it.
Well, there would be no maintenance after you, theoretically, unless somebody ran over it. That wood price of lumber now has gotten pretty pricey.
It's expensive. Either way, it's going to be expensive. If we want to go chain link, I would try and nail down if we want 2-3 foot, 4 foot high fence, what heights we're looking at. These blocks will end up as a, it's not really a fence, it's just a divider. It's only 2 feet tall, so you're not really gaining per se any privacy by going this way. Not even really going to stop a dog from jumping into your site.
So the wood's going to be no higher than the block.
Right. It'll come out flush with the top.
I see some advantages to this in that they're movable.
Mm-hmm.
If at some time in the future we have to do work in there, we have to replace sewer lines or whatever, we can at least pick them all up and move them. Former RVer, I'm not too fond of chain link fences personally.
Yeah. And there is a sewer easement that goes right down the middle.
There's a sewer easement, and chain link fences are. We had them out there at the dry camp as well, and if you look down where the dry camp area is, they do get kind of, they're in a different location. But when they bend or anything, it's kind of over. And if we went with the chain link, I would recommend looking at the coated chain link so the rust doesn't show. I think you can get multiple different colors in it, but that would add expense too. What would you guys like to see?
The least expensive, the least maintenance,
the flawed,
the easiest of them all.
So the lumber, you're going to use regular lumber, or would you use something like Trex?
It's car decking. It's the 1.5 inch car decking. It's tongue and groove. It's 1.5 inch by, it's a 2x6, but it's tongue and groove.
But
and
it's
pine.
Okay.
And
how does it work with the weather? I mean, it's right down.
Well, with the car, with it being tongue and groove and being locked in at each end with the channel iron, because each one of those ends will get screws to go through it to keep them down. It's kind of just like a giant horse stall. I don't know if you've ever seen horse stalls. It just has the slats dropped in with the angles and you screw them in, and they're not going to move or warp or anything. Too bad. I mean, of course, they might a little bit, but the tongue and groove is going to keep it pretty straight.
And the ones that are down there now are like redwood stained, or are you going to treat this
wood
in any way?
They've just been, it's a stain that's been mixed and Yeah, it's just stained. It's just cedar fence boards, pressure treated, stained.
I'm just looking at putting bare wood down that is not treated, not pressure treated, not stained or anything. How, you know, longevity of that wood is, I like this. I just think we need to do something with that wood other than even raw.
Well, I mean, it comes, it's very easy to stain.
Yeah.
We can go through, we could stain them all before you even put them up, just lay them out in the shop. We can do it that way. And like I said, at the bottom where these boards are going to go down, the bottom will be kind of a countersunk 2x4 or a 2x6 just to keep the raw, the lumber off the ground.
Travis, would that be something that would have to be stained every year?
I'm sure that would be a part of maintenance.
I can tell you, coming from the desert, we used to have cedar fencing. We would treat it every year with fence oil and a backtrack spray.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Simple. I mean, somebody has to stand there and do it, but it doesn't take a long time, and fence oil is not particularly expensive.
Yeah. Either way, you're going to look at whatever fence you put up, if it's chain link with flats or chain link, you know, eventually you're going to have to pressure wash it. It's going to get moss on it. It's going to, it's going to get sandblasted every once in a while. The concrete blocks and this car decking was as strong as a material as what we could really come up with for a divider. I mean, there's lots of other options, but it's up to you guys.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the expenditure for the new RV park fence dividers at an estimated cost of $23,800.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to permission to display a Bible education cart. And that's here, right, at the retail center?
It's here at the retail center. I know in the past they've been granted permission to set up and do it. This is more making...
It used to set up right out here?
Yeah, just right out here in front. That's what's been done historically. He's been doing it for many years here. But at this point, with what Gary was going with, is just to make some sort of agreement with them saying that they could occupy and essentially solicit what they have on port property. Is anybody else that were to come down and be trying to sell anything or give out anything in a professional kind of look, which they're close to, we would tell them to stop. There's no solicitation. So I think this is covering that end of what our four ordinance would say.
So are you guys going to, like, designate an area for them to be at? I mean, have you contacted the other retail people here and that
I'm not sure exactly what Gary has done. I don't think he's contacted the retail businesses. I think it's kind of one of those things that's probably your guys' decision. It's not really the retail's decision. They don't get too much say in other businesses coming in here. I mean, there is public comment. We are in a public meeting right now, so
right.
That's where I would leave that.
I don't recall ever having seen it before, but that's neither here nor there. Does it go in and out every day? Is it
yes.
Permanently out?
Yes, they come in. It's a very small little wheel cart thing that has flats and different brochures, and usually there's two of them with a chair, you know, sitting right out there by the light poles. It's a pretty harmless activity they're doing.
Yes, somebody that might find their material offensive.
I guess I'll step on the slippery slope here. I'm only concerned about a precedent.
About what?
A precedent.
There.
And what I mean, this is a complicated issue in this country right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is if we go ahead and formally allow this, then the next person that comes along, should there be one, that wants to do something that we don't think is okay, we're going to have to make some sort of a judgment call based on our prejudices, I guess, one way or the other. You know, there's no way you can kindly say this without being portrayed as being anti-Christian or anti-religious or anything else, but I'm just not very interested in getting into a situation where we're going to be the arbiters of what's okay and what isn't. That's my biggest concern.
I agree with you, Richard. I just didn't know how to say it.
Well, you can't say it because all of this is in your brain and your judgment and what you think is okay and not okay. And you know, I know that there are regulations in government that prohibit these kinds of things in government buildings and that sort of thing for just exactly these reasons, because they don't want to, for example, you know, a federal building in Portland, Oregon, if you were to say, okay, you can put one of these inside the federal building, then you have to be the person to say, and that means we'll take anybody. So, you know, I can think of all kinds of extreme groups that we certainly wouldn't want there, but that's because we don't think they're okay.
And so, we're not allowed to even put up political signs on court property.
Right. So there's one other avenue that I've thought about that we could possibly go with is adding something to include something in our rates that allows a single vendor booth. I know we've had issues with people playing music out on the boardwalk, not so much as an event, but a single occupier's use by charging them a fee, you know, and then get us out of a single agreements with it is just use our event area where we have power, we have the general public coming by and possibly creating a fee for, say, a one person, you know, type solicit. The only way I could think about doing it fair would be to charge them somehow, just like they were going to be anybody else.
But the issue I get into there, again, is the same issue, whether you charge them or not. And that is it, whatever the activity is it in comport with what the court's mission is, if you will. We have retail centers here with people selling things, and those are usually goods. Now we're talking about potential for people selling ideas and influences. And that's a little bit tougher thing because, you know, whereas we can look at whatever materials are being sold here and I guess make a judgment about their legality or their acceptability from community standard. I'm thinking of a porn shop, for example. I'm not sure that's something we would want here, but when you get into this arena where people are basically selling concepts, ideas, that's when I get concerned about this. Because that sword cuts both ways. And, you know, when we have on this hand somebody that would like to display Bibles here and religious information, I suppose there's an idea that somebody from the Aryan Nation could come here and says, I just want to put my stuff up and try and talk to people about what I believe. And, you know, like I said, this is a tough arena right now in this country to be even talking about this kind of stuff. 20 years ago, not an issue. It is now.
It could get big.
And it's involved with freedom of speech and all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm sorry our attorney isn't on because I'd like to get their thoughts about all of this. This isn't my area of expertise by any means. I just can see that this could be an issue. Would you prefer that we defer action on this and talk to our attorney about it?
That's an option. But I'm kind of on the same line as you. I mean, this specifically says Jehovah's Witness, and there's how many religions out there? So if we let Jehovah's Witness do and Catholic, Protestant, Baptist, and any of those people come, we can't say no to them.
We're not promoting them.
No, but we're allowing them to be here. So the Catholic, Protestant, Baptist come and say, hey, you let them, let me. We have to let them.
Again, I'm not even focused so much on
religious
aspects. I'm just more focused on what I mentioned. This is not a standard product here, which is a retail center. This is selling, promoting, or exposing something that's different than that.
Let's table
an ideology.
So would it be different if they leased this building and then turned around and made a, whatever we don't necessarily agree with?
Well, the difference that I see there is, and this is probably maybe too nuanced, but if you know, based on what's on the door, what's in the side here, and you walk in and say, okay, that's something I'm interested in, that's one thing, as opposed to walking down the street and using a public space where somebody says, here, I'm trying to change your mind about things, or I'm trying to expose you to this. That's maybe a nuanced difference, but I see that as a difference. So I would suggest that we defer action on this until we can talk to the attorney and maybe have him present and see what he says. There may be things that we don't know about when it comes to this kind of stuff.
I think that's a good idea.
Yep.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Okay. Action item F, sale of court property. Apparently the court has received a purchase proposal for the property across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this listed with the realtor for many years, and apparently we don't do that, haven't done that recently.
We pulled it 2 years ago.
About two,
yeah, something like that.
Bring something to us.
And if I recall,
we were paying and we weren't getting any offers, and the agreement with that realtor came back up to be renewed, and it was decided that we were going to take it off the market for the time being.
So at the time that we had it listed, it had a current appraisal on it?
Yes.
All right. So whatever appraisal we had last completed in 2017, so it's predated based on today's valuation of property. So it appears that if we want to consider selling this property, that we probably should have a current appraisal to give us an idea of what the value is.
Yeah, so with this action item is what we're trying to get right now is, do we want to sell this property? Because it's not worth going through all the hoops that we have to go to if we don't want to. But if we do want to, that's when we need to talk to James, the legal team, and see about current appraisals, about listing it, if it has to be listed for everybody in the public. I know when it comes to sale of public property, we need to be careful and make sure we follow the steps that are outlined in selling public property. But I think for this current action item, it's a yes or no. We are interested in selling this property, and then we can go to James and figure out the process of it. There's negotiation periods, executive sessions. I'm not exactly sure about it, but I know there's quite a few steps that we need to follow. More in particular, the current appraisal, and if it needs to be listed for any amount of time for people to be able to purchase it.
So Travis, I have a question. We have two storm drains that border that property on this side of the road, correct?
On our side?
Yeah. We have the one next to
We have the new one we just put in on our side of the curb there by Rigetti.
Yeah, and then we have one right across from David Allen's. Doesn't that one?
It comes through the road. Anything that's on the road is not ours. It would be anything that's in our parking lots or our storm drains. So if we got rid of that piece of property, that entire storm drain problem would go away as well. Because that line dumps into the storm drain that goes through Rigetti's. And then
okay,
we do too, but we dump into it much farther after.
My question also is, according to the roadmaster, they want us to donate property for retention ponds. If we put a retention pond over there, that would be adequate. We don't know what the size is, but there's enough flat ground over there on the other side of the 10-foot right-of-way. I think there's a 10-foot right-of-way that borders the road.
So far with the county's plan, that actual culvert, I don't think it's actually a part of it now that you're saying that.
Okay.
I should relook at that because I don't think that's in there.
Okay.
As far as in the, I need to relook at that. I don't think it's in that plan to have that one added for a sediment catch. It's down farther in our launch ramp and then by our office.
All right.
And
well,
proceeding down.
Look at it. If it would work, then I'd want to keep the property. If it doesn't work, then I would vote to sell the property.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Well, I don't want to give up usable property on this side of the road for a retention pond or sediment pond.
For that side of the property. Is that what you're saying?
I'd put one over there because that property has been useless to us, and we're never going to build on it. So if we could put it.
Yeah, I don't think, I see what you're saying now. I don't think that one's in it, and none of our sediment problem or any issues that we currently have, that is not impacting us at all right now. That's the one that dumps right out here just by Zola's, and we've never had an issue with that one. That one's, that's actually a good catch. We've never had an issue with that one.
You've answered my question.
Okay.
All right. I'll test what if you'll allow me to make a motion. I move that we begin consultation with our attorney on the process to sell the port property across Lower Harbor Road.
I second it.
Is that clear enough? Danielle Shrouds, that motion?
So, yes, you guys are interested in selling the property? That's what I need to know, and then I'll get the information we need to know for starting that process and kind of what it looks like.
I made this motion specifically with a consultation about our attorney part to make sure that you're covered. Could go ahead and get a hold of them. This is an additional expense above and beyond, so that's why I did it.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Jill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you say no?
I said yes.
Oh, okay. I heard you say no. That's okay. But, okay. That brings us to the FEMA construction drawing. So what we have in front of us is a pretty extensive package from our engineering firm, EMC Engineering, about the FEMA project and the construction drawings for the FEMA project. And with that, I have already exceeded my expertise on this, so Jack, if you don't mind, I'll turn it over to you.
We are ready with these drawings for general purposes, for example, RFP, obtaining contractors to work with more than adequate to supply to the regulatory community for the permitting process. And, you know, that's the purpose of these drawings primarily. And, you know, we've had through the, years that we've gone through the process, we've made a lot of adaptations and changes. These are CAD drawings, so you know if there are discoveries, changes, or there's other plans in the overall master plan, which I realize that we don't have for the Port of Brookings general master plan. It's too complex for that, I think. In this case, there's too many variables that we can adjust accordingly. So I would recommend approval of these drawings so we can proceed with the regulatory and permitting process.
So So just to encapsulate what I think I saw in here, so these drawings include the rose paving, in the gear storage area, the boatyard.
Yep.
And.
Stormwater systems.
And also the repairs to the wall of the basin.
And that could repair dredging, it's all included.
And the storage oil area also.
Yes, storage area. Nice thing about storage areas, you can adjust it in any one of a number of ways. Variables that we still work, are working, for example, options for disposal of setup and that kind of stuff. So meanwhile, there is a point where it's not really beneficial to report to go over too much minutia with respect to some of these because it can hamper the regulatory process and the process of getting everything going, which as long as you're within the same parameters, any adaptations or changes are not going to affect the progress of regulatory, but you do need to proceed with that in order to be able to have everything done in the time when you need it to be done. And I'm particularly wanting FEMA to be able to tell FEMA that these are the approved drawings. And from these emanate, for example, costs and associated considerations that they have, including environmental erosion control, things like that, that they all might hear about. We had, of course, submitted an initial, but we haven't been able to tell them that this is our final. Consequently, the budget is not exactly finalized. We are going through discussions with FEMA right now on a question about dredge volumes. And when we get that nailed down, we're going to have actually a conference tomorrow at 2 p.m. to help them understand what a bathymetric survey means. And, you know, there's just misunderstanding there. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Okay, so
important.
If we will approve these drawings, if we do that, then that gives you the process for proceeding ahead with this part of the project, which is basically moving ground, other than dredging. Well, no, including dredging.
Including everything. Yeah.
It doesn't include things like the dredge yet. That's another part of the package, correct?
That's right. By the way, we do not have to do any, this does not constrain us on any particular method of dredging. Basically, all it does is talk about volumes and materials. Volumes are the big one. From that, it emanates all our other money. Remember, we've been able to leverage two storm events, 2019, to a $4 million project. And it's very valuable to make sure that we solidify our basis of what we're doing here. The drawings are a part of that. They defend what we're doing. So that's why I'm recommending you.
Okay, so they not only defend, they define everything that we're doing, especially in some specific.
Yes. When the government's giving you money, you know, you go through a few more hoops than you would on a standard construction project.
Sure.
So that's what we're doing. That's what we're going to.
Okay. All right. Comments, questions?
But these are just, I don't want to say just, these can still be tweaked.
Yes.
I think what I heard you say is what you want to do is be as generally specific as you can without locking yourself in a hole by saying we're going to do this,
exactly.
Unless you have to.
And fortunately, the construct of FEMA funding and including in the regulatory processes as well, they all know that you're not supposed to lock in too much detail. It's just enough to then to get a solid idea as to what's being proposed.
Okay. Motion?
I make a motion to approve the FEMA construction drawings, dredging, commercial roads, and stockpile boatyard paving, embankment rock reconstruction, and the incorporated in the bid package to be incorporated.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second.
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. All right, so as I do, let's just take a moment to memorialize this moment. This is a big thing. $4 million worth of work on the court, solving a number of identified issues that we need to fix. And here we are. So, thank you, Jeff.
It's been my pleasure to get this done.
That brings us to the next item, which is the preliminary wastewater treatment plant design. Jack, I will again defer to you on this.
Okay. Well, I should say, here we go, right? Countdown. Anybody know how in the world I got that strange sound here that you're not even looking at it yet? Good. Of course, this is working fine before you guys just showed up. So it's your fault. Not the slideshow setting, the computer setting. Okay. I'm not clear what I changed. Good thing you're here. Well, that's what I'm getting right now. Bad when you go ahead and did it already before you showed up, just like. Okay. I'm on back. Yeah. Okay. Let me. See, in terms of saying the slideshow. Very embarrassing.
There's a lot of engineering that needs to be done because without a road up above,
it
only needs to be good road. Stockpiling shit to the border. It cost me.
Display setting.
It's not worth over $120,000. I don't care what anyone says. Depends what you want to do, but you got to take the chain wall off. I'm pretty sure
you would have gone to the other one.
Okay.
Try that. So,
I looked at it about 3 months ago, and I had a guy look at it. I don't know what he meant. I was down. I was down a whole building on that floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. showing anything else. Can't imagine why it worked before and doesn't work now. It has no soul. I have to agree with that. See,
there it is coming.
Well, that's the thing.
That's step one. That's just the computer telling you it's alive, or the projector telling you it's alive.
Well, it was like before.
But it still has to talk to the computer.
Oh, yeah.
How many fish have you caught so far? Seven.
No, see,
24.
Yeah.
All right, one. That's good.
Yeah. I only have one. So, in terms of
what you could be
doing. Are you having trouble with
it? I just know.
Well, as far as this thing is concerned, you know, I just don't know why in the world it would have what's the difference here.
Sure.
Okay. All right. As far as settings on this, there's a what? Oh, it's use the presenter view. That's what it said before.
I think if they went outside 100, 125, they'd really find them. Just hang the break up there.
So, show media control, play narration.
Well, that's where you could have sure you echo out there.
Each time you high fly, sort of show.
Larry, are you going to the meeting tonight?
Full screen. Stuff on her computer.
My crew, they kill.
From an email that you sent me.
Everything they kill, they eat.
We have it here, too.
Okay. Well, I will work, although I've revised it because of the questions that I had wanted to answer that the commissioners had sent. So I can go.
Did you revise it?
Yeah, okay. We can do that one, and I'll just go ahead and add to it.
You would never back to feel like it. You go on that.
Yeah, let's
sure you would. Then you'll have it.
Go ahead and put that one down here too, I guess, huh? And I can make changes based on the revisions I made. No problem. I guess I should expect the unexpected. And then start slicing and get it all over. Oh, yeah. It's not showing them there.
No,
I'm showing you the next slide. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, sorry about that, guys. I apologize. I don't know how it happened.
Boy, if it had never happened to us, we'd be really upset.
Oh, to do a dry run and have it work and then the time didn't, that's not good.
I cleaned it all.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, here we go. Okay.
So this basically what we're doing is we're looking at options. I think it's useful to just mention that any wastewater treatment system that we select will work. It will be accepted by the DEQ, and it will do its job. Then the question is, what is the best alternative based on our particular wastewater, our mix of wastewater, the environment, what the preferences are. When I originally brought up a wastewater treatment, it was an aerobic system. There were a lot of whistles and bells, and as we got analyses back, we found we didn't really need. Portions of that were originally presented were only presented as, well, this is what we might need. As we looked at the wastewater data itself, a specific seafood supply and forest, the problems became more and more simple. An example would be, for example, sand and grit. Well, the method of harvesting of shrimp does not bring forth a lot of sand and grit. You don't see a lot of it in the wastewater. So you don't need to treat for sand and grit, really, at this facility. There are a lot of others. There's a lot of oil and grease that comes out of shrimp heads and so on. So and there's a lot of variability. Aerobic appealed to me initially, and still does, but we'll talk about that later, because it reduces sludge. All the organic material is reduced. So you have two real basic categories that can help you here to see the options that are available to us. One is by filtering and screening. Okay. The other is, and then you handle the sludge, that you have not reduced it at all, but you handle it. The second one is by biological processes, where you actually reduce the organic. Now, nothing can be done to get rid of the inorganic material that is not, previously, it's not biological. It's not going to reduce no matter what you do. So you have those two categories, filtering, biological, and you can combine them. And large plants that deal with, particularly with domestic waste, they always combine them to different degrees. And as time and knowledge advances, those systems are getting more focused than they were originally. So consequently, we start off with what is the condition that we're in right now with Pacific Seafood. Pacific Seafood, important asset here as far as I understand, and so it is at present out of compliance with federal and state wastewater effluent requirements. Currently, the facility uses a rotary drum screen to treat approximately 500,000 gallons per day discharge. In real life, we find that it's actually usually quite a bit less than that. The plant is not under a permit. It's presently operating under agreement with ODEQ. DEQ will currently issue upon the plant's DMR, that's the reports that they have to submit, a notice of noncompliance. Those DMR reports have been submitted to ODQ in recent weeks, as I understand, in discussing with Amy and also, I think, Brett. It's not clear exactly when the NON will be issued, or if it, in fact, will be. The response by the plant to whatever the DEQ says would be to present a plan to the DEQ as to how they're going to get in compliance. They're going to be standing there watching and saying, what are you going to do? Okay, you're out of compliance, what are you going to do? So at that time, the DEQ is expected to hopefully enter into agreement with Pacific Seafood based on the Port of Brookings Harbor's ability to provide wastewater treatment or some other option I'm not aware of. Pacific Seafood has expressed in no uncertain terms that it cannot afford the multi-million-dollar price tag for a wastewater treatment. However, the Port of Brookings Harbor has received a promise for $3.5 million grant to provide wastewater treatment for facilities. The port has investigated initially a well-tried aerobic system, but the port feels that the footprint is too large. We've come up with about 220 by 280 foot footprint. And its multiple components and its general configuration is too complex and overbearing in appearance. I think we can agree with that. I think that's what the input I've gotten, not just from the public, but from the board here. Since then, the port has investigated the available applicable wastewater treatment approaches that are applied to fish processing, which include DAF, anaerobic, multi-stage aerobic, and membrane technologies, or a combination of any of those. So let's talk about DAF a little bit. Well, I won't get too detailed unless you want me to. DAF and probably going to be no, right? So DAF is a clarification process ideal for treating raw wastewater, like live particles. It utilizes very fine bubbles, and with flocculation, which is created by chemicals, it causes, you know, particles to become larger and more easily separated from liquid solution, and they float up, and they're basically removed in some sort of way. They're scraped by waterfall. They're scraped from the solution, and you produce a sludge. The sludge is heavy with coagulants and flocculants. Metals are no longer really used in new systems, but polymers are. Anyway, the process, when looking at it, pluses and minuses, we concluded that DAF is at this time the most used applied technology applied to the treatment of fish processing wastewater. The unit itself, the size for the Brookings Pacific Seafood Facility, would likely cost about $500,000. However, with installation costs, programming, and auxiliary systems would likely range between $1.5 and $2.5 million. Why such a big range, and why would there be such a difference from the initial piece of equipment? The fact is that from experience from Pacific Seafood, which is probably the most relevant information you can get on the use the challenges with DAS, is first of all, if it's not automated, the constant expertise and changes that need to be made presses you to go towards automation. Automation does not answer all your problems, but the cost involved, auxiliary dealing with the sludge itself, which cannot be used for composting that I can see, cannot easily be used for composting or fish meal or other secondary uses, is complex enough so that the range of what you have to do can range anywhere from a total of about 1.5 to 2.5 million. The system is used at the Westport facility, seafood facility, folks also used at Newport. We have multiple interviews with Amy Wentworth, Corporate Director of Environmental Health and Safety, and Caleb Unima. He's the research and research development manager of Pacific Seafood Value Creation Team. He's really the guy that is the Pacific Seafood, as far as I can tell, their expert on DAS systems. And also their utility with this particular mix of shrimp and crab. I'll try to not let this go on too long. But we've had several phone conversations, and this is what Amy has written to me. This is verbatim, quote, we have a DAF at our Westport facility that produces crab and shrimp. One of the biggest challenges we face is retaining DAF operators who are trained and capable to operate the DAF. It's a dirty job and requires mechanical, technical, and chemical knowledge. DAFs run best when they're treating consistent flows. Okay, now you guys have already read this, right? So you don't need me to read all of this to you. So what I want you to do is stop me if I'm leaving anything behind. So I don't believe I have. Oh wait a minute! I'm not advancing this while I'm going here. I'm sorry.
Wrong computer.
Yeah. So this is what I've read to you so far. And I interviewed Caleb himself and talked to him several times, including today, discussing advantages and disadvantages of DAF. I've also spoken to Dr. Efrem Monosov, who happens to be a worldwide expert on wastewater treatment systems in general. Both of them, including, and as you saw, Ms. Wentworth, advise against it. Okay. For the reasons that were discussed. Now, this goes on to the next slide, but in between that slide, I've put in a couple other things per my interviews, which I should probably mention. Caleb was asked for specifics. I did ask him a little bit more specific about what his concerns were. He said, and Efrem Monosov, I won't repeat it, almost said exactly the same thing. I did not allow these two to talk to each other. They don't know each other. They've never met each other. I didn't express the opinion of one to the other. I wanted to hear independent views on this. It's important enough. They said basically DAF operations are complicated, requiring skilled labor to operate and maintain. Manually operated systems need constant adjustments of valves, flow rates, flocculant, and coagulant mix adjustments, etc. This is what I mean by automating. This is how they're trying to solve this problem up there, is by automating. Although he's already seeing problems with the automation. Hired operators skilled with DAF operations are few and far between. Operations of these plants are generally seasonal, and the work is challenging. Pacific Seafood has a very difficult time keeping qualified personnel. Automation can ease these challenges, but automation presents its own challenges. The job is a dirty job. A DAF treating the Brookings Pacific Seafood waste would produce the equivalent of about a tote of sludge every half hour. The sludge is about 3 to 5%, which can be pressed to about 15. But the sludge is not pure organic sludge. That's my problem with it. Okay? It's laced with polymer that makes it very difficult to be reused for recycling options, as I described, composting, fish meal, etc. Some DAF systems use metals. No way we're going to touch that, which we wouldn't recommend if DAH was selected at PM, at the port.
Can you copy this for a second?
Go ahead.
What do you cost? 8 hours a day, 12 hours?
We're running 10 hours a day, don't you? 6 days a week.
So probably having one operator for this plant might not be realistic. We're looking at 60-hour work week.
The DAF is a system that does require quite a bit of oversight. You really, from what I've heard from the Pacific Seafood, I have never installed or designed a DAF system. I've designed wastewater treatment, but not this one. And so I have to rely on the expertise of others. They say that this is a very highly intensive, and the problem they're having, I have an example of something I pulled off the web, one of their advertisements for a DAF operator, which I'll show. But maybe I didn't, because that was a response to your question. So I'll kind of read it to you when we get to that. Point is that it says, it goes on to say in my discussion with Caleb that the DAF operation of the Newport Pacific Seafood Facility requires high maintenance on a daily basis, which includes frequent sludge handling, chemical adjustment, experiencing an upset of some sort or a breakdown nearly every week. According to Caleb, every 8 days, a Newport plant requires a shutdown and a cleanup of the system. Startup after each cleanup require adjustments to chemistry, flow, aeration settings, etc. So, the concerns regarding odors is very real. The key to avoiding odors is the speedy handling of sludge. That's in any wastewater treatment system. You need to have the thing designed so sludge is really not exposed or available to air for any period of time, as little as 1 hour in some of the cases of fish waste. So breakdowns, cleanups, etc. are cases where sludge handling can be delayed, and that's where your possibility for odors occur. And that's not in your version that I gave you. Also, Dr. Fimonosov, wastewater consultant to EMC, was asked for specifics as to why he does not recommend DAF or shrimp crab processing wastewater treatment. Fim, as I said, does not know or has not spoken to Caleb, because we desired independent opinion. Fim's opinions regarding the subject were very similar to those expressed by Caleb. He cited concerns about such operations in a relatively remote location as ours. Commenting on the complexity of operations when considering the seasonal and high variable nature of shrimp process. When he looked at my data and he looked at the numbers and the volumes that were provided to me from Pacific Seafood, he said DAF would be probably one of the last systems he would recommend. He also commented on the high costs for daily operations and chemical costs, the ease of making mixing errors, and the unsuitability of DAF sludges for anything other than landfill disposal. Employment requirements were downloaded from a Pacific Seafood web-based advertisement, which I can supply with you guys sometime if you want. But basically, it talks about the duties, qualification, education, physical requirements. Education, you know, the person needs to be able to spell and read and you know, and do basic arithmetic and things like that. But that's only in the education experience
physical requirements are standard, they're tough, you know, you're not easy, sometimes it's a dirty job working on wastewater. The biggest concern is really primarily with the experience. The experience of the utilization of food processing equipment, experience with DA operations is preferred. If you don't have that experience, you're going to, according to Caleb, you know, it's going to take a while to train them. And once you train them, they don't stay long because there's really not enough money. It's seasonal. Their expertise is it's a small group of people. They don't particularly, it looks like, they don't seem to like the job. So it's keeping people qualified in place with the DAF is going to be a challenge. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't work. DAF can work. And so I just want to tell you that I think from what I've been able to do myself and the calculations and analysis I've done, I think it's not your best choice. I think that... there'll be times when you wish, you know, you'd gotten a cleaner, simpler system to run. The anaerobic flotation reactor, I won't waste my time with it because we know it's out of budget. And I'll tell you, the more I've looked at it and looking at ways to make it financially available, I began to understand some of the details about biogas treatment and handling. And it's just not anything I think I would recommend the board enter into. So I think that it's one that I don't recommend. Let me get the same place here. Now, this membrane alternative was actually presented to me by Efim Monaco because of his experience with them and their usefulness, and he took into account our facility, the type of wastewater we have, the kind of expertise needed to run membrane technology, the kind of maintenance required, and the longevity of the system so far. As we began to look at this, we began to see that this could be, again, as it's a filtering process, it's not a biological process. So we don't reduce any sludge from the wastewater that we pull out of here. We just, it's nano, that means 10 to the negative 9th meter diameter, very small diameter, membranes, and it's the kind of system that will produce a clean sludge. There's no, as you asked appropriately, there are no polymers added to the system. There's no chemical added to the system. To describe it any further than that may be beyond the interest of this group. You have to tell me. Basically, its configuration is rather simple. It looks good. I've added, right before the slide you're looking at on the screen, I've added some testimony. Again, I will tell you that this, what I'm going to tell you right now is sales. It's from the company producing it. So before we would be sure of this, we would have to visit the plant and interview people for ourselves. We're not going to talk about a big system like this, and not big in size, but big in cost, without confirming all these things to be true and that the system is working all over the place. However, this particular company, Zwitter Mott, it's two companies that work in conjunction. The biggest one they have is a 3 million gallon a day system. It's about more than six to ten times the size of this system. It bioprocesses wastewater, and it also serves manure digestate for water. They have 13 such projects. This is the largest one they have. They use it for bioprocessing, manure digestate, food and beverage wastewater, and leachate, landfill leachate. They spotlight this one because, and it's unfortunate I can't show it to you, but it shows, I'll kind of point it at you in a minute so you can see it. But the this particular one has 10 months of successful operation no chemical cleans needed since the start of the operation, which is extraordinary. There's no chemical cleans at all. Customer, according to them, is so happy that they're piloting Zwitterco membranes at other locations at their plant, so that they are wanting to put it in other places as well. They're very happy with it. So the system, it would look kind of like this, only this is a, and I'll show you some aerials. You've seen some aerials already on this, but it looks kind of like that. Can you guys see it?
You guys see it?
Okay. That's what the system would look like.
Straining eyes out there.
I'm terribly sorry this is not showing on the screen. I can't explain why. So, so we're talking about alternatives, and the alternatives are to treat the remaining waste sludge via AFR. I think that's out. Alternative two, AFR is, by the way, the expensive one, the one that's big, the big one with biogas. Alternative two is after solidifying membrane permeance, you solidify it from 3%. Comes out as 3%. You get it through a filter press, and you bring it down to 15%. You routinely deliver the sludge to solid waste. This would result in one truck or less per day. It turns out, the more I look at it, the less I see as far as sludge. From there, alternative beneficial waste uses, composting, would be investigated. There's no alternative in here that I direct the membrane permeant into a 42,000-gallon multi-stage aerobic treatment system. Remember when I first showed you guys that big circus tent-looking thing with all those tanks in it? Well, since you're talking about far less material after you're bringing it through that, fairly inexpensively, you can put in a 42,000-gallon stainless steel tank, multi-stage, and you can reduce that sludge significantly by getting rid of the organic side of it. It's pretty much odorless. And that's something you can consider perhaps as a second phase. If the wastewater treatment plant would probably, and you'd look at that with the plants in place, and you look at that as an alternative to reduce sludge if it's worth it. And it might well be. I have a system about that size that's been working since 2000. Well, the pilot plant was begun. I put it in 2002. We put in another 40,000 gallons in at that same facility of this stainless steel type, stainless steel closed. I can show you. I'm going to show it to you the same way I did this time. I'm going to pick it up and show it to you closer. That kind of a system has been operating there successfully since 2006 in California. So the first quote we got for this particular system, as you see here, is 2.5 to 3 million for this system. However, what we need to do is get samples in, which we've done now. We've produced for bench chemistry. There was a delay because they tried to charge us. Okay. And the team said to me, you will not pay for bench testing. They will pay for it. That's $5,000. And I said, really? I mean, he said, that's the industry standard. You don't pay for bench testing. And they said, I said, you know, but I really like this screen because it resists oil fouling, oil and grease fouling. His response was, they'll be back to you. A week later, they came back to me. They're doing the bench testing for free. So the bench tests have been sent now. They were sent today by your favorite here. And that will give us more indication, more able to focus the system on the particular wastewater. We want particle density and things like that are important to being able to my objective is to make this project smaller. So we'll see where that goes, but that's where we're at right now with this particular system. And aerobic, let's not go with the aerobic right now. So we're looking at footprints here, okay? Actually, on these now, because further research, we can actually remove one of those. The middle size circle. See this middle size circle on those?
Mm-hmm.
these are two possible locations that we think are good ideas. The thing I like about this one up on the top right, is that it may allow us, depending on our funding, may allow us to actually restore that deck as an access. Okay. And you wouldn't need it in, you know, at the most intermittently, but maybe not at all, but you might need it, and we could actually restore that deck. I'm meeting, since I'm here anyway, tomorrow I'm meeting with somebody that restores deck, a contractor, ask them, talk a little bit more about, we put an initial cost idea in our natural hazards mitigation plan, if you remember. Part of that plan is that we want to repair that dock. So so this might be something we can do if you guys want to.
So to make sure that everybody's clear, that's Civic Seafood Plan on the right. So this building or this facility would be located directly next to it.
Right next to it, behind the dock.
Okay. And so that would reduce our plumbing transportation.
That's true.
Following that, where would the discharge point be, right?
We probably use the same discharge point that they're using now. And reason for that is also because we already have a mixing zone study, and the cost of the mixing zone study would be decreased by the fact that we're using the same location.
That site there would be more or less hidden above the other structures.
Yes. I mean,
it would just be adjacent to it as opposed to standing out here on bare ground all by itself.
It'll actually be one of the better looking areas of the port there.
And it won't impede any operations of the other business that's there?
No, it won't. It's a pretty fine system.
And if it was like alternative three, it's a little bit bigger, would it be as possible?
Alternative three, I don't know if I put in the, I guess I did, alternative two, alternative. Yes, alternative three, I'm gonna show you what the tank looks like. See that checkerboard looking rectangle there? This is what the one that I actually installed in 2006. Show them around, yeah. And you can see what those tanks look like. Shows you with the doors open. It's clean looking. It's stainless steel. Lasts forever. There's very little maintenance.
Is that the size of a semi truck trailer?
Yeah, that's right. That's about what it is.
And there would be one of those.
Yeah, one of them. It'd be a little. It would be wider than this, same height, same length.
And so this is the aerobic system.
This is the aerobic system.
That is an ammo.
That would reduce the sludge. You saw the chambers on there, right? Those are the same chambers that you saw in that big circus tent looking thing going around in a circle. This is actually more efficient. I think I might have mentioned that to you, that a rectangular is better. The reason why they had this circular is because they actually put it into an old clarifier foundation, which was round. So, and that's what they get used to doing. I thought that Aquarius owned the technology. F.A. Monosoff actually designed this technology. He's nothing to gain or lose by it, but he doesn't own it. It's no longer owned because that Aquarius was a different company. That the one that bought them for several million dollars went out of business. So this Aquarius that I showed you, their circus tent looking thing, is no longer has domain over this technology. So
you mentioned this particular piece of this as a phase two, possibly.
Yes, I think it's something that could be considered an alternative to sludge handling. It'll reduce a great deal of sludge.
Do we know from our federal appropriation if we can actually construct phase one, test it, and then build phase two with the same money, or would we build the first one?
The construct of the money of the loan does not separate out the option of a phase two. Phase two can certainly be part of the project.
And it's so phase one and phase two would fit within the federal appropriation of 3.5 million.
That's what I'm working towards. I need more, I need the bench results, and we also are not going to limit ourselves to one single membrane provider. We're going to look for competition to get a lower price. We'll keep working on it until we get the price where we can. That's the way you got to do this. They call this a feasibility study. Many places when they do wastewater treatment system, feasibility study lasts from 1.5 to 2.5 years. But we have some advantages on this that allow us to proceed. Also, another thing you should know is that the permitting process, which is the next thing we're going to talk about briefly, very briefly, the permitting process is such that new permits are rarely granted in the state right now. You don't have a lot of them going out for NPDES wastewater treatment permits. The ace we have in the hole is that this is publicly funded, got pressure, political pressure, and a serious pressure on the Pacific seafood itself, and the DEQ is mandated to seek economic benefit in addition to protecting the public health and the environment. So we think that we are going to get a little bit of an edge on the permitting process.
You know the environment far better than I, but would it not seem logical that regulatory agencies would tend to be leaning towards this sort of an approach as an example for everybody else? I mean, this is what they want us to do.
Yes, I think the regulators like this kind of technology, and I think there are, I know of at least six different other operations, including fish processing operations, including Pacific Seafood, other operations that are looking at what we're doing here too. Everybody's watching, and there's some of them wish that they could do what somehow you did, that is get federal funding from the Depositories Office to do this. So this is pretty remarkable from that standpoint. But that having been said, we don't do anything lightheartedly here. We just do it very carefully.
Oh, Jack. In the motion here, it was said to approve wastewater treatment plant preliminary drawings. And
drawings? You
so
mean design?
We're going to need to decide what type of a
system
today, right? Because otherwise, how can you make drawings on something you don't know what we're doing?
Well, I would say that I don't feel. It's up to you, but I don't feel comfortable with corralling the commission with a definite choice of design at this point. I think you should wait till I get some better budget numbers. But you can do something like, for example, if you wanted to get a suggestion on a possible motion, would be to authorize procedure proceeding with this and going with my recommendations as long as I'm able to stay within the budget of the grant itself. Something like that. I would leave it open-ended for your sake, so you're not in a situation where you've made a motion. Of course, you can always make another motion with new information.
So you would suggest the motion include a membrane and
I would, but I would say I would hang something on there giving you a way to adjust that situation.
Okay. Are we at the point now where we should?
I also think that you guys should maybe include something within to proceed with the design at either two of the locations, just so it's out there too. I really like the fact that it could go right next to their building versus all the way over by the fuel dock. So I just to continue, less piping, less, the closer you can stay to that plant, the better. So it just, maybe something with this future design to incorporate it to fit that area.
I try to minimize my engineering on this. Until we get funding, but I still don't want to. I want the process to proceed.
I think Jack knows exactly what size
of a footprint we're looking for, and if possible, to try to keep it over there. But yet, if it cannot, then of course we have the other option as well. It's more money.
And just so I understand, you're recommending the membrane method as of right now.
I am.
You're leaning towards that direction right now.
Yes, I am. Okay. 100%. I'm just leaving myself open for discovering something that is not beneficial to the port. So, it looks like a clean, really good option.
So I guess the other thing we were talking about is this option, whatever we build, we know it's not going to be running every day. So
to get started,
I mean, not even all year. We're talking 4 months?
Brett can actually
6 months?
6 months.
6 months. You know, so as you're looking through it, making sure that the shutdown process of it doesn't, you know, things drying out, things
it's
getting
a membrane cleaning process.
Caked on there.
Yeah, it's a membrane cleaning process. It's a membrane wash. It's very simple.
And with this motion, it will also help with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality that we are
proceeding. Thank
correct?
You for mentioning that. Yes.
Thank you.
That's
really important.
The one location next to the plant over there, is that their property, port property? Where's the
port
owns that property? So we have access to it all the time.
Yes. Currently, right now, that area, the dock fell in. It's actually considered condemned. No activity is supposed to be on it until the deck's been fixed.
That would be fantastic to be able to restore that.
But if we
yeah.
can fit it in there and get use some of this money to just fix up the top of that, we'll be quite ahead of the game. And getting at least another receiving dock open, too, another area of dock that can be open.
Yeah, and Gary was telling me that if we could repair that dock, then the steel wall would be readily available for the dredge to come in, and we wouldn't always have to remove.
We could look at adjusting, if we had more receiving docks, we could look at adjusting our current
yeah.
tenants to not have to shut them down for
right.
different things.
Thank you.
That was pretty painful.
Well, that's because I decided not to talk too much. That's right. I talk less, so it's good.
Well, sending your presentation, we read it, and it was very helpful. Thank you. Appreciated that.
If only I can get it to show up on my computer, right?
Yeah, you can explain wastewater treatment plant, but you can't explain why it won't pop up on the screen.
Man's got no room.
Okay. Any further? I'm ready to try a motion. This is a long one.
I see that.
All right. I make a motion to approve Jack Aiken, EMC engineer scientist, to proceed with the wastewater treatment plant for preliminary designs and pursue Oregon Department of Environmental Quality permit with these conceptual drawings. The preliminary drawing should be based on membrane cleaning process and aerobic treatment or more applicable technology within available federal appropriations. The site location should be optimized for operations and infrastructure.
Wow, Richard.
Perfect.
That it?
That's it.
I second it.
That was pretty good.
First try. I want to mention to you that I am sensitive about the fact that this money that I spend on wastewater treatment is not being reimbursed. And that I'm aware of that. And I am trying to minimize the amount of work I'm doing to that which is necessary to progress the project forward.
Okay, so you're comfortable that the motion gives you clear direction?
Yes.
And we're comfortable with that. Okay. Daniel.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Another moment to memorialize as a first step. Well, I won't say that. As another step in the process of a waste treatment system.
We're moving forward.
Okay, that brings us to RV park improvement project payment request number two. And as I understand this, this is from the contractor for reimbursement for materials that are actually purchased and stockpiled on Tuesday that will be used on the project.
Yes, and Mike Crowe did go to Reese Electric and inventory what they had, and he's is the one that actually greenlighted the payment for the end of what he's keeping track of up in Coos Bay.
Okay. And so just to kind of reflect where we are at the moment, so the initial process was to begin earlier this year, but we were stopped by a lack of supply of the materials necessary. So we stopped the project and asked the contractor to go ahead and purchase materials and have them on hand for when the project initiated. So that's where we are now. So now that the contractor has actually spent money for product, it's time for us to reimburse it to that point, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
And you're saying they've inventoried it, they've got an inventory.
It's sitting at Reese Electric in a shop.
So they're not going to use it on other projects and then say,
No, an independent
party. As of when they did this, no.
An independent party actually invoiced or inventoried it. Okay.
I make a motion to approve McMillan excavation progress payment number two for $106,654.12 for the purchase of the bonds, insurance, and electrical materials for the RV park improvement project.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Okay, that brings us to information items. Boatyard dustless blast. You can read that literally and it sounds pretty concerning, but. So, questions I have, is there one of these down there now, or is this picture of one they demonstrated?
I'm trying to get to where this is all at. 144.
Thank
you. Am I on the wrong one now? Okay, so one of these blasters was actually purchased by a guy here in town. They do have a website. You can go on the website. You can look at what they have. This one that he purchased, the second to the biggest one, comes on a trailer. It's quite the machine. But it's what it does is it uses materials such as glass, crushed walnuts, and other abrasives that can be used for other than sand, and it's mixed with water. Roughly, you're looking at 20 gallons of water every hour, hour and a half, that will come out with 100 pounds of material. It's a lot like sandblasting, but the water holds it down, keeps it down, and allows the material to fall. And I watched a demo on it. They did a small section of the boat. Our best management practices, it encourages new environmentally friendly ways to get these guys to be able to achieve what they're wanting. Currently right now, to achieve this, you're looking at a grinder, something that they're going to dig into the side of their boat and spend many days doing. This is a fast, environmentally friendly way that the cleanup is easy. I spoke with DEQ, I spoke with Daniel with our environmental that does our 1200Z permit. No permitting requirement, no regulations other than what our best manager practices and the cleanup are required for this. It is just more if it's something that we decide, it falls really closely under sandblasting for us, so I want to make sure if we do approve it, that it's separated from sandblasting, and our best management practice states this type of blasting in particular to be able to use.
So the problem is also air quality.
Water quality.
Resolve water quality. It's the same material coming off the bottom of the boat, whether you grind it off or blast it off, right?
I guess it's an air quality and water. It's an air quality, I guess, when it's airborne, but when it lands on the ground, it's, you know, that sand or whatever is contaminated, which then washes down storm drains, and you know, it's a lot like grinding when it goes airborne. You know, it that dust settles somewhere.
I'm not arguing that this is something we want to do. I'm just concerned that it only resolved the air quality issue, because all the particulates that come off, whether they're ground or blasted off, still go on the ground. So
well,
the zinc, copper, whatever other things we're concerned about are still there.
Yes, but now they're wet and they have fall down on a tarp. You know, the entire process still requires tarps, screens on the side to contain that mess. But after they're done, it's a material you can just roll up in the plastic and throw it away. So it's a matter of containing your area while this process is being done. You could do a whole boat in a day versus grinding and sanding with no water, no way to get the paint and whatever else is on the boat to fall straight down. Like I said, the water that mixes with it, it drops straight down. Once they're done, you move the boat and pick up the tarp. One of the things that if we do implement this activity, I would like always to happen on the concrete, as long as we have tarps, screens, sides to contain anything that's leaving. Some of the times when it probably wouldn't be okay to be doing it would be when it's raining, when the wind's blowing, you know, heavy winds, just to protect yourself. That would be one of the things that I would tell them to implement. But the bottom line is, as long as the material is contained to a tarp and is falling straight down and can be picked up and removed environmentally and from the DEQ, air quality, talks about air quality too, there's no regulations against us implementing this.
So what kind of a price tag are you looking at on this?
I don't want to buy this. I don't want to do. We're not going to do this. This is a service I want to be able to be allowed. They would come here. They would contract with this person.
That's
they would do all of it. It's just right now our best management practice and our yard rules prohibit any type of sand blasting or blasting at all. But this is a new system that has came out that so far has been recognized as environmentally friendly process that all the regulators that I've found don't have any issues with.
Wow.
Sandblasting, there's an issue.
I've got all the literature on my house with this. I was going to buy one, not that big, quite a bit smaller, so I could put it on the boat.
Would the practice or would the process then be that you will bring this back to us to approve the further best management practices,
I just wanted to throw this information at you, let you guys kind of digest what process I'm asking you for. In the next meeting, I'm going to bring you guys best management practice update, and then I'll actually have to update the our 1200 ZR stormwater permit as far as activities allowed in the boatyard. But this was an information item first. I wanted you guys to see what we were talking about, because I'm going to bring it to the next meeting to build it, update and implement this as an option for boaters to use.
Okay, so if the person comes and does this service for someone, and then after the tarps and everything are rolled up, are we disposing of them?
Well, we could give the option to dispose of them at a charge that we have for doing that, I would be leaving it on between the boat owner and the person that's providing the service to do this entire process.
Okay.
I haven't quite figured out I would like it always to be done on the concrete, and I think they would find that it would be a better process for them to do it while the bottom of the boat's still wet than it is. But I don't want to back myself into that corner yet in case of scheduling or they can't get here. I don't want to be picking up and moving boats. It's just going to add to more costs. So that's why with the best management practice, tarps, sides, and a contained area. But I will encourage them to do it on the concrete where we have sumps and actual infrastructure there.
The water would keep particles from being airborne, so that solves that. Water goes down. Tarps will collect particles, but water's still going to run off.
I'd say there's probably about 20 gallons worth of water that's still going to come with it. That's why I want it to be done on the concrete, if I can all help it. If we can come up with another way that in the site that the water can be contained, like say, the bottom line is as long as the material's not leaving the site. Maybe after so long, if it starts pooling, they have maybe they have to shop back it up. But my recommendation for them, because if they can't do it while they're out there, they'll be immediately shut down. It'll be an immediate stop, and they'll have to clean up whatever mess they have.
Sure.
So that's why I'll encourage it on here where I have a sump where we already have a lot of that kind of activity happening, mm-hmm. and we have filters and processes to deal with those contaminants there.
That was my concern, is that the water went out somewhere off the tarp, off the cement, do we then have contaminated ground?
It could lead to that. That could lead to, you know, them having to clean up. That's why them containing their mess to their site will be up to them, and violations of that will be at their expense.
There you go.
Okay. That brings us to the boat shop and water lease.
So the boat shop and water lease, we received a letter from Kenny, I believe. Basically, it boils down to the, he wants out of his lease. He's not finding that he's making very much money at it. And the money that he is making isn't worth the liability that he's incurring over having it. So this letter's in here. He gave kind of a brief overall of what his expenses and, you know, kind of stating his case of where he's at the end of each month. With us taking him off this lease, it will bring the boatyard and that boat activity area back to the port, back for us to run. So the things that will include will be a lease amendment, boatyard rates, and what we want them to include in. We just changed it, but we're going to have to figure out yard days, environmental fees, and I'd like to go over kind of how I see things happening and make sure that whatever we decide that our costs are covered or if they're not all being covered or met, that at least we all know about it. The
so
standard
he's not
practice.
Leaving, he's just terminating the boatyard.
He will
still going to be down there.
Yeah, it will be just amending his lease where the dry dock boats would be, and he'll still use where the boats on trailers are back there, and then he'll relocate some of his other stuff back there, and we'll redo his footprint for the ground lease that he's still using.
Yeah.
Is there a penalty for breaking the lease?
My guess is
that if the board agrees to let him out of the lease, you guys can do that with no repercussions of doing that. I'm not exactly sure.
I didn't follow one thing there. Is he staying in the building?
Yes. He'll still be staying in the building. He'll still lease out behind that shop where he has 120 foot worth of boat spaces. He might lease a little bit more behind that to get his trailers and his totes and stuff out of that corner. But once he has that, I'll just remeasure it and we'll just amend his footprint that he's using for bare ground.
Would this come into the lease be reviewed by the attorney anyway?
Yeah.
So he can look at the idea.
It's what I'll do. It's kind of the same way Gary did it. We'll make a, well, yeah, the attorney's going to look over it always, but we'll give him the information that we need. Switch, yeah, an amended lease, and then I'll do another map with, just like what Gary had there, with a picture of what his lease area is going to be, and then we'll send it off to the attorneys to finalize all of that.
All right, that brings us to C, the charismatic megafauna issue. Into the Fish and Wildlife Service Sea Otter Study outline for the next step. Well, they are coming. And there's a lot of momentum behind this at the Washington, D.C. level.
Yeah, they've
got so, but what I understand is that this process still calls for some meetings with local folks to discuss some of the particulars. And that's where we need to be involved, if we choose to be.
How is that,
Well, yeah, there are, this is another, as I said, this is another charismatic megafauna, so you're going to have a lot of emotional issues attached to otters. They are protected by the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is currently being considered for amendment as it relates to pinnipeds or seals and sea lions because of the amount of damage they do. The concern about sea otters is they have great environmental benefits in terms of eating urchins, which protect kelp forests. But they also eat clams and oysters.
Yeah.
So there are some concerns about the commercial fisheries for the, if these things get established and they aren't clean enough, oysters particularly, that's a problem. They are having a major impact in Alaska on the clam populations right now. Every time they sit up and smack a clam on their chest, that's an issue. Well, the issue, the only issue from my perspective for me personally is I want to make sure that there are some clear provisions written into whatever legislation is involved with this to talk about what do we do if, and not leave ourselves hanging like we did with all the other marine mammals, to where we now have to go back and try and amend the Marine Mammal Protection Act to allow the expansion of taking care of sea lions. So that's stuff.
Okay.
Oh, so the last item is the, yeah, the boat yard clam shell.
Before we move on to that, this sea otter study, I guess I am not very informed on what's happening. Are they trying to reintroduce them out of the Port of Brookings?
They're trying to reintroduce them in suitable sites in Oregon and California.
And
we don't know where those are. They haven't selected them yet.
Okay. So we'll continue getting more information on this as it comes, and we'll just keep presenting it as it comes until it, okay.
Yeah, but
it's the same station. Oh, I'm not super ecstatic about it.
Those are river otters. They're entirely different.
Yeah, totally different.
They're so cute.
Yeah, but
any of those,
they're all cute.
Otters, sea lions, whatever they are.
These destructive little creatures that need to be not reintroduced.
They're like a...
They all have brown eyes.
That's why I said it politely.
Okay.
Okay, so clamshell dredging. So as you guys know, we had a board-to-board meeting with the Curry County Commissioners. At this time, the county states the sediment at the travel lift ramp is the port's responsibility. The county offered to remove the sediment at cost after the dredging has occurred. Currently right now, they would be hauled to at least Gold Beach at their at cost, which I think would be astronomical to haul it that far. I did send an email to Jack. He is going to start working on quotes that we can bring back to you guys in our September meeting to get this pile removed. Again, it's impacted haul-outs, emergencies. We will have to be waiting until the tide's right. we've ran into this before. I have pumped on phones for 3 hours waiting for the tide to come up high enough just so you could put them in there. And we're shooting to push this along as fast as possible to get it done during the in-water work period and possibly give the current contractor that's coming to do the pile replacement, give them and give us a, hopefully a good opportunity at pricing to get that done.
That'd be great.
At the same time. You got anything? And Jack's also working on the JPA, the joint permit application for that dredging as well as the piling.
And we were talking about the 15 regulators we always talk to, so that's what that process is right now. Also should mention that I have meetings scheduled tomorrow with all three of the contractors on site, so the potential contractors to do that.
And then I also contacted three contractors here for quotes on removing the existing pile that's there from the last time and the next pile that's coming this winter. So we'll see how much this one is, and it'll probably be relatively close to the same cost, the same amount of material this time as it is that's there.
I wanted to ask you close. Along those lines, have you, what's the name of it? One of the contractors keeps slipping my mind. That
Freeman
Rock, I think it's Chris.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
Investigating whether or not they can use the rock.
Yeah, I called him. He said he talked to you. He's supposed to be coming out tomorrow. Tidewater and McLennan. Are the
can they crush it? Is that what you're looking at? Use it for something?
We're looking for
just see if it's usable for anything. But we got to remember that most of this material coming out of the pipe is not sand and silt from the river. It's from on land. All right, it's just
so
rock.
Gonna,
it's rocks and dirt.
So we're going to, like, test it to find out where
we're not
going to
test
can
it.
Go?
We're just going to have them come do a visual look at it and let them determine if they have. I mean, it's easy enough to ask if they do have a use for it, because if they don't, if they do, it's going to cost us less. It's worth to ask.
Okay.
But we're working on worst-case scenario, just having it hauled off with no other use. So well, I'll have all that for you guys in the next meeting.
I would comment on our commission meeting, and I was left with a kind of a sour taste in my mouth about how we were told that that's our responsibility. And so I think at some point in the near future, we need to sit down and contact our attorney and have them do a deep dive into Oregon drainage law and see exactly what our options are. I mean, I'm not an attorney, I'm not a bunch of anything, but I can tell you I just can't imagine that the law allows people to dump stuff on your property and you end up being responsible for it. That doesn't comport with my idea of civil concept, but the attorney would have to tell us that.
I agree, that's why I asked him. It starts there, everything comes down to here. It's going through multiple other properties owned by other people, but yet, we're the ultimate responsible.
Well, I would say that would be a question for our attorney ultimately, or
yeah.
Do we have grounds to sue, and then who would we sue?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that, and again, without any legal backup, but it seems to me if it is in a county-owned culvert when it enters our property, they own it. But anyway.
Well,
okay.
that particular pipe, they already have a catch basin there. But evidently, they're not monitoring it enough, and that's why we're getting so much.
Well, that's all stuff that
so, you
we
know,
would have to demonstrate in the civil court. That would probably cut
yeah.
Well. Okay, Mr. Comment.
I just wanted to say thanks, Jack, for the three options and stuff you gave us. If I didn't have, I don't know what to say. I was looking at something a lot different and stuff, and I really appreciate what you did. Okay, I'll say it like that.
Well, I didn't do it myself because I had a lot to do.
No, I know, but
making sure I was doing what you needed. So,
did a good job.
Feedback. Sharon and others, Ken, all of you, really helped me scope that exactly what. What shouldn't be done.
Sometimes I don't think we're really clear. on what exactly we're looking for sometimes, I think.
Here's the dilemma of ICA. Without even understanding the process, it's pretty hard for me to be clear on what I want. You know, I want something that's cheap, easy to run, and doesn't take up much room, but that doesn't give you much to go on. So Jack's been really good about saying, you know, this was a great.
The comments were effective, and they did give me focus on exactly what I shouldn't do and what I can go ahead and eliminate. Very, very important. The layperson, their understanding is always deeper. As an engineer, one of the reasons why I've never been sued, okay, in 30 years of operation is because I don't stick with my design, no matter what people out there in the field observe or have experienced. And I work with them and end up with a successful project. If I say, this is the way you need to do it, I'm an engineer, here's a stamp, I find it. The people that do that, they fail. They got errors and omissions. Suits going on, they're problems. It just works better to hear from not just the commission, but the public. Concerns about smokestacks on wastewater systems and so on is uninformed, coming from some public person. But nevertheless, it says, oh, wait a minute, there's a perception here. And how messy does this thing look? Because sometimes I'm looking at function, and I don't worry so much about how it looks. So it's been helpful.
I took a class and read a book by a couple named Hans and Emery Bleicher. They wrote a book called The Development of Informed Consent. And it talks about how you take the public from one point of view and you help them understand exactly what's happening, just like we have done, just like today. So this is what you think you have. This is what you're actually going to have. That's called informed consent. So it's an important process, and you did a good job.
And this is happening fast, guys.
Well,
these projects have gone 2.5 years easily.
Yeah, we should all be proud we moved forward quite a bit today in this meeting. And I want to thank the staff for all of the work that you're doing, because you guys are having to step up a lot.
Thank you, Trevor.
You guys are welcome.
Yeah, I'd like to make a suggestion that we have a workshop for a business plan on the water treatment plant. We haven't done that with the full committee. We've got a timeline here. We need to do it as soon as possible. And then for our bylaws, we have a committee of two write up the basic scenario of what we come together on and bring it back to the commission for approval.
But Jim, don't you think that we really need to know what type of the system and the cost we're looking at before we can start?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things we've never discussed. The system, we will get the information.
Right,
the system is kind of irrelevant. That's Jack's. You know, he's going to design a system. We have to come up with how we're going to operate it, how we're going to pay the match, and how we're going to do the financial side of this thing.
Right now, we don't even know what we do need.
Well, we know what the
city. We're getting closer, but I think what Ken is saying is we'll have a workshop just to identify the parts.
We need a basic plan that shows all the players. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we need to have an agreement with Harbor Water. That doesn't seem to be a concern to others. We need to have an agreement that we need different agreements with the players that are going to be. Pacific Seafood, right now, they have said that they will not put up millions of dollars. Well, what are they willing to put up? We don't have any information. Are they willing to put up 100,000? Are they willing to put up, you know, maybe you, and you know that answer, but I don't.
I don't think anybody
so
can.
We need to identify the things that we need to know. We're looking at a time schedule. When Jack comes back and says it's going to cost you $3 million, we better have some answers and some direction. We need to talk to DEQ. Have we filed the permit? I mean, that's a confusing issue in itself, because when we first started this whole thing, Pacific Seafood had applied for the federal permit. They withdrew their application because we were filing one. Did we file it?
So
There were about five different questions there, but they're not. Listen, I would like to defend what you're saying about a workshop. It is normal. And also, it is favorably looked upon by federal sources of funding. They want to see workshop done, okay? You want to cross the T's, do due diligence in terms of the financial. But if you're talking about communicating with the DEQ, I would recommend highly that nobody contact the DEQ from this commission unless you, I mean, you have to do whatever you want, but I would say in the best interest of the port, do not be contacting the regulatory community regarding your concerns or your interests. It's better to keep that within our...
Maybe you should be in our workshop also.
Oh, I'm happy to contribute in any way that would be beneficial to it. I agree with what you're saying. So, but I'm saying in terms of the regulatory side, this is a funny thing going on right now. That plant is operating without a permit.
Right. Has been for 3 or 4 years.
Well, no. It's always had a standard agreement under the 900J. The problem, however, is that it's now come to the forefront, and it wasn't due to anybody's actions. It's come to the forefront. We happen to coincidentally have some funding. So we need to continue to show progress towards what we're accomplishing, even if, I have to say this, even if you don't do it in the long run, you know, to keep that plant operating so it doesn't get shut down, we need to have communication that we're moving forward to the DEQ. And we need to look like we're organized and we know what we're doing. And so coffee shop talk is ex parte in this kind of thing, in my opinion. Talking to others about the situation is not going to help the port. It's going to be dangerous. And it can be dangerous if wind gets to DeFazio's group because they already got that message somehow through the papers, discussions that we're not committed, you know, to doing this. And there was a danger that they would withdraw funds. And so I'm just, all I care about is the benefit of the port. Believe me, that's all I want to see. I don't care what happens as far as what wastewater treatment goes. If the port decides we don't want to do wastewater treatment and you want to get rid of, you know, fishermen that are using the Pacific seafood and get rid of the operation of the seafood, that's another decision way above my pay grade. But I'm assuming that you want to keep this facility here, and therefore I got to act in your best interest. And it's monumental that we do it exactly like Ken said, cross the T's, dot the I's, make sure that all agreements are in place. It's going to make everybody satisfied. I agree with that 100%. But let's stay away from the regulators.
That's all fine. Yes. We need a spreadsheet that shows a business plan. That's all I'm suggesting.
That's probably very smart. I have to give you more data. And I think Sharon was saying, you're going to need more data from me before you initiate a productive workshop. So... But otherwise, you got no bottom line to work with. So. That's all opinion. No? You guys are in charge. I'm just your consultant.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Further. Okay. Our next meeting is Friday at 10 o'clock to start the process for recruiting a new manager. Don't forget to bring in three paintings.
Right. Three paintings.
What we'll do when we get those is we'll write them all down and see how many of them are.
Okay.
All right. With that, we are adjourned.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.